twinkling in one of the three crystal chandeliers. Rune said tightly, "Tiberian said the governor wants these murders kept quiet. But I'd like your permission to warn my mother." Every word grated. "I'd like your permission." His father waved a hand. "Permission granted. She'll heed the warning." Just as Rune's mother had obeyed everyone her entire life. She'd listen and lie low, and no doubt gladly accept the extra guard sent to her villa, down the block from his own, until this shit was sorted out. Maybe he'd even stay with her tonight. She wasn't queen, wasn't even a consort or mate. No, his sweet, kind mother had been selected for one purpose: breeding. The Autumn King had decided, after a few centuries of ruling, that he wanted an heir. As the daughter of a prominent noble house that had defected from Avalon's court, she'd done her duty gladly, grateful for the eternal privilege it offered. In all of Rune's 75 years of life, he'd never heard her speak one ill word about his father, about the life she'd been conscripted to. Even when Ember and his father had their secret, disastrous relationship, his mother had not been jealous. There had been so many other females before her and after her. Yet none had been formally chosen, not as she was, to continue the royal bloodline. And when Bryce had come along, the few times his mother had met her, she'd been kind, doting even. Rune couldn't tell if he admired his mother for never questioning the gilded cage she lived in, if something was wrong with him for resenting it. He might never understand his mother, yet it didn't stop his fierce pride that he took after her bloodline, that his shadow walking set him apart from the asshole in front of him, a constant welcome reminder that he didn't have to turn into a domineering prick. Even if most of his mother's kin in Avalon were little better, his cousins especially. "Perhaps you should call her," Rune said. "Give the warning yourself. She'd appreciate your concern."
"I'm otherwise engaged," his father said calmly.
It had always astonished Rune how cold his father was when those flames burned in his veins.
"You may inform her yourself, and you will refrain from telling me how to manage my relationship with your mother."
"You don't have a relationship. You bred her like a mare and sent her out to pasture."
Cinders sparked through the room.
"You benefited quite well from that breeding, Starborn."
Rune didn't dare voice the words that tried to spring from his mouth.
"Even as my stupid fucking title brought you further influence in the Empire and among your fellow kings, it still chafed, didn't it? That your son, not you, retrieved the Star Sword from the Cave of Princes in Avalon's dark heart. That your son, not you, stood among the long-dead Starborn princes asleep in their sarcophagi and was deemed worthy to pull the sword from its sheath. How many times did you try to draw the sword when you were young? How much research did you do in this very study to find ways to wield it without being chosen?"
His father curled a finger toward him.
"I have need of your gift."
"Why?"
His Starborn abilities were little more than a sparkle of starlight in his palm. His shadow talents were the more interesting gift. Even the temperature monitors on the high-tech cameras in this city couldn't detect him when he shadow walked. His father held up the prism.
"Direct a beam of your starlight through this."
Not waiting for an answer, his father again put an eye to the metal viewing contraption atop the prism. It ordinarily took Rune a good amount of concentration to summon his starlight, and it usually left him with a headache for hours afterward. But he was intrigued enough to try. Setting his index finger onto the crystal of the prism, Rune closed his eyes and focused upon his breathing. Let the clicking metal of the orrery guide him down, down, down into the black pit within himself, past the churning well of his shadows, to the little hollow beneath them. There, curled upon itself like some hibernating creature, lay the single seed of iridescent light. He gently cupped it with a mental palm, stirring it awake as he carefully brought it upward, as if he were carrying water in his hands. Up through himself, the power shimmering with anticipation, warm and lovely, and just about the only part of himself he liked. Rune opened his eyes to find the starlight dancing at his fingertip, refracting through the prism. His father adjusted a few dials on the device, jotting down notes with his other hand. The starlight seed became slippery, disintegrating into the air around them.
"Just another moment,"
the king ordered. Rune gritted his teeth, as if it had somehow kept the starlight from dissolving. Another click of the device, and another jotted note in an ancient, rigid hand, the old language of the Fae. His father recorded everything in the half-forgotten language their people had used when they had first come to Midgard through the Northern Rift. The starlight shivered, flared, and faded into nothing. The Autumn King grunted in annoyance, but Rune barely heard it over his pounding head. He'd mastered himself enough to pay attention as his father finished his notes.
"What are you even doing with that thing?"
"Studying how light moves through the world, how it can be shaped."
"Don't we have scientists over at CCU doing this shit?"
"Their interests are not the same as mine."
His father surveyed him, and then, without a hint of warning,
"It is time to consider females for an appropriate marriage."
Rune blinked.
"For you?"
"Don't play stupid."
His father shut his notebook and leaned back in his chair.
"You owe it to our bloodline to produce an heir, and to expand our alliances. The Oracle decreed you would be a fair and just king. This is the first step in that direction."
All Fae, male and female, made a visit to the city's oracle at age 13 as one of the two great rites to enter adulthood. First the oracle, and then the ordeal, a few years or decades later. Rune's stomach churned at the memory of that first rite, far worse than his harrowing ordeal in so many ways.
"I'm not getting married."
"Marriage is a political contract. Sire an heir, then go back to fucking whomever you please."
Rune snarled.
"I am not getting married. Certainly not in an arranged marriage."
"You will do as you are told."
"You're not fucking married."
"I did not need the alliance."
"But now we do."
"There is a war raging overseas, in case you weren't aware. It worsens by the day, and it may very well spread here. I do not plan to enter it without insurance."
Pulse hammering, Rune stared at his father. He was completely serious. Rune managed to say,
"You plan to make me marry, so we have solid allies in the war? Aren't we the Asteri's allies?"
"We are. But war is a liminal time. Power rankings can easily be reshuffled. We must demonstrate how vital and influential we are."
Rune considered the words.
"You're talking about a marriage to someone not of the Fae."
His father had to be worried to even consider something so rare.
"Queen Hecuba died last month. Her daughter, Hypaxia, has been crowned the new Witch Queen of Valbara."
Rune had seen the news reports. Hypaxia Enador was young, no more than 26. No photos of her existed, as her mother had kept her cloistered in her mountain fortress. His father went on.
"Her reign will be officially recognized by the Asteri at the summit next month. I will tie her to the Fae soon after that."
"You're forgetting that Hypaxia will have a say in this. She might very well laugh you off."
"My spies tell me she will heed her mother's old friendship with us, and will be skittish enough as a new ruler to accept the friendly hand we offer.
Rune had the distinct feeling of being led into a web, the Autumn King drawing him ever closer to its heart. I'm not marrying her.
You are the Crown Prince of the Valbaran Fae. You do not have a choice.
His father's cold face became so like Bryce's that Rune turned away, unable to stomach it. It was a miracle no one had figured out their secret yet.
Luna's horn remains at large.
Rune twisted back to his father. So? What does one have to do with the other?
I want you to find it.
Rune glanced to the notebooks, the prism.
It went missing 2 years ago.
And I now have an interest in locating it. The horn belonged to the Fae first. Public interest in retrieving it has waned. Now is the right time to attain it.
His father tapped a finger on the table. Something had riled him. Rune considered what he'd seen on his father's schedule this morning, when he'd done his cursory scan of it as commander of the Fae Auxiliary. Meetings with preening Fae nobility, a workout with his private guard, and...
The meeting with Micah went well this morning, I take it.
His father's silence confirmed his suspicions. The Autumn King pinned him with his amber eyes, weighing Rune's stance, his expression, all of it. Rune knew he'd always come up short, but his father said,
Micah wished to discuss shoring up our city's defenses, should the conflict overseas spread here. He made it clear the Fae are not as they once were.
Rune stiffened.
The Fae Ox units are in just as good a shape as the wolves are.
It is not about our strength of arms, but rather our strength as a people.
His father's voice dripped with disgust.
The Fae have long been fading. Our magic wanes with each generation, like watered-down wine.
He frowned at Rune.
The first starborn prince could blind an enemy with a flash of his starlight. You can barely summon a sparkle for an instant.
Rune clenched his jaw.
The governor pushed your buttons. So what?
He insulted our strength.
His father's hair simmered with fire, as if the strands had gone molten.
He said we gave up the horn in the first place, then let it be lost 2 years ago.
It was stolen from Luna's temple. We didn't fucking lose it.
Rune barely knew anything about the object, hadn't even cared when it went missing 2 years ago.
We let a sacred artifact of our people be used as a cheap tourist attraction,
his father snapped.
And I want you to find it again.
So his father could rub it in Micah's face. Petty, brittle male. That's all his father was.
The horn has no power,
Rune reminded him.
It is a symbol, and symbols will always wield power of their own.
His father's hair burned brighter. Rune suppressed his urge to cringe, his body tensing with the memory of how the king's burning hand had felt wrapped around his arm, sizzling through his flesh. No shadows had ever been able to hide him from it.
Find the horn, Rune. If war comes to these shores, our people will need it in more ways than one.
His father's amber eyes blazed. There was more the male wasn't telling him. Rune could think of only one other thing to cause this much aggravation. Micah again suggesting that Rune replace his father as city head of Phyro. Whispers had swirled for years, and Rune had no doubt the Archangel was smart enough to know how much it'd anger the Autumn King. With the summit nearing, Micah knew pissing off the Fae King with a reference to his fading power was a good way to ensure the Fae Ox was up to snuff before it, regardless of any war. Rune tucked that information aside.
Why don't you look for the horn?
His father loosed a breath through his long, thin nose, and the fire in him banked to embers. The king nodded toward Rune's hand, where the starlight had been.
I have been looking for 2 years.
Rune blinked, but his father went on.
The horn was originally the possession of Peleus, the first starborn prince. You may find that like calls to like. Merely researching it could reveal things to you that were hidden from others.
Rune hardly bothered to read anything these days beyond the news and the Ox reports. The prospect of poring over ancient tomes just in case something jumped out at him while a murderer ran loose. We'll get into a lot of trouble with the governor if we take the horn for ourselves.
Then keep it quiet, Prince.
His father opened his notebook again. Conversation over. Yeah, this was nothing more than political ego stroking. Micah had taunted his father, insulted his strength, and now his father would show him precisely where the Fae stood. Rune ground his teeth. He needed a drink. A strong fucking drink. His head roiled as he headed for the door, the pain from summoning the starlight eddying with every word thrown at him.
I told you to warn that girl to stay quiet. Find the horn. Like calls to like. An appropriate marriage. Produce an heir. You owe it to our bloodline.
Rune slammed the door behind him. Only when he'd gotten halfway down the hall did he laugh, a harsh rasping sound. At least the asshole still didn't know that he'd lied about what the Oracle had told him all those decades ago. With every step out of his father's villa, Rune could once more hear the Oracle's unearthly whispering, reading the smoke while he'd trembled in her dim marble chamber.
The royal bloodline shall end with you, Prince.
Chapter 15. Syrinx pawed at the window, his scrunched-up face smooshed against the glass. He'd been hissing incessantly for the past 10 minutes, and Bryce, more than ready to settle into the plush cushions of the L-shaped couch and watch her favorite Tuesday night reality show, finally twisted to see what all the fuss was about. Slightly bigger than a terrier, the chimera huffed and pawed at the floor-to-ceiling glass, the setting sun gilding his wiry golden coat. The long tail, tufted with dark fur at the end like a lion's, waved back and forth. His folded little ears were flat to his round, fuzzy head. His wrinkles of fat and the longer hair at his neck, not quite a mane, were vibrating with his growling, and his 2 big paws, which ended in bird-like talons, were now, "Stop that! You're scratching the glass!" Syrinx looked over a rounded, muscled shoulder, his squished face more dog than anything, and narrowed his dark eyes. Bryce glared right back. The rest of her day had been long and weird and exhausting, especially after she'd gotten a message from Juniper, saying Fury had alerted her about Briggs's innocence and the new murder, and warning Bryce to be careful. She doubted either friend knew of her involvement in finding the murderer, or of the angel who'd been assigned to work with her. But it had stung, just a bit, that Fury hadn't bothered to contact her personally, that even June had done it over messaging and not face-to-face. Bryce had a feeling tomorrow would be just as draining, if not worse, so throwing in a battle of wills with a 30-pound chimera wasn't her definition of a much-needed unwinding.
You just got a walk, she reminded Syrinx, and an extra helping of dinner.
Syrinx gave a "hm," and scratched the window again.
Bad, she hissed.
Half-heartedly, sure, but she tried to sound authoritative. Where the little beast was concerned, dominance was a quality they both pretended she had. Groaning, Bryce hauled herself from the nest of cushions and padded across wood and carpet to the window. On the street below, cars inched past, a few late commuters trudged home, and some dinner patrons strolled arm in arm to one of the fine restaurants along the river at the end of the block. Above them,
The setting sun smeared the sky red and gold and pink. The palm trees and cypresses swayed in the balmy spring breeze. And that was a winged male sitting on the opposite roof, staring right at her. She knew those gray wings, and the dark shoulder-length hair, and the cut of those broad shoulders. Protection duty, Micah had said. Bullshit. She had a strong feeling the governor still didn't trust her, alibi or no. Bryce gave Hunt Athalar a dazzling smile and slashed the heavy curtains shut. Syrinx yowled as he was caught in them, reversing his stout little body out of the folds. His tail lashed from side to side, and she braced her hands on her hips. You were enjoying the sight? Syrinx showed all his pointy teeth as he let out another yowl, trotted to the couch, and threw himself onto the warmed cushions where she'd been sitting. The portrait of despair. A moment later, her phone buzzed on the coffee table, right as her show began. She didn't know the number, but she wasn't at all surprised when she picked up, plopping down onto the cushions, and Hunt growled, "Open the curtains. I want to watch the show." She propped both bare feet on the table.
I didn't know angels deigned to watch trash TV.
I'd rather watch the Sunball game that's on right now, but I'll take what I can get. The idea of the Umbra Mortis watching a dating competition was laughable enough that Bryce hit pause on the live show. At least she could now speed through commercials.
What are you doing on that roof, Athalar?
What I was ordered to do.
God spare her. Protecting me doesn't entitle you to invade my privacy.
She could admit to the wisdom in letting him guard her, but she didn't have to yield all sense of boundaries.
Other people would disagree.
She opened her mouth, but he cut her off.
I've got my orders. I can't disobey them.
Her stomach tightened. No, Hunt Athalar certainly could not disobey his orders. No slave could, whether Vanir or human. So she instead asked,
And how exactly did you get this number?
It's in your file.
She tapped her foot on the table.
Did you pay Prince Rune a visit?
She would have handed over a gold mark to watch her brother go head-to-head with Micah's personal assassin. Hunt grunted,
Isaiah did.
She smiled.
It was standard protocol.
So even after your boss tasked me with finding this murderer, you felt the need to look into whether my alibi checked out?
I didn't write the fucking rules, Quinlan.
Hmm.
Open the curtains.
No, thank you.
Or you could invite me in and make my job easier.
Definitely no.
Why?
Because you can do your job just as well from that roof.
Hunt's chuckle skittered along her bones.
We've been ordered to get to the bottom of these murders. So I hate to tell you this, sweetheart, but we're about to get real up close and personal.
The way he said, sweetheart, full of demeaning, condescending swagger, made her grind her teeth. Bryce rose, padding to the floor-to-ceiling window under Syrinx's careful watch, and tugged the curtains back enough to see the angel standing on the opposite roof, phone to his ear, gray wings slightly flared as if balancing against the wind.
I'm sure you get off on the whole protector of damsels thing, but I was asked to head this case. You're the backup.
Even from across the street, she could see him roll his eyes.
Can we skip this pecking order bullshit?
Syrinx nudged at her calves, then shoved his face past her legs to peer at the angel.
What is that pet of yours?
He's a chimera.
Looks expensive.
He was.
Your apartment looks pretty damn expensive, too. That sorceress must pay you well.
She does.
Truth and lie. His wings flared.
You have my number now. Call it if something goes wrong or feels wrong, or if you need anything.
Like a pizza?
She clearly saw the middle finger Hunt lifted above his head. Shadow of death, indeed. Bryce purred.
You would make a good delivery boy with those wings.
Angels in Lunathian never stooped to such work, though. Ever.
Keep the damn curtains open, Quinlan.
He hung up. She just gave him a mocking wave and shut the curtains entirely. Her phone buzzed with a message just as she plopped down again.
Do you have enchantments guarding your apartment?
She rolled her eyes, typing back, Do I look stupid?
Hunt fired back. Some shit is going down in this city, and you've been gifted with grade A protection against it, yet you're busting my balls about boundaries. I think that's answer enough regarding your intelligence.
Her thumbs flew over the screen as she scowled and wrote, Kindly fly the fuck off. She hit send before she could debate the wisdom of saying that to the Umbra Mortis. He didn't reply. With a smug smile, she picked up her remote. A thud against the window had her leaping out of her skin, sending Syrinx scrambling in a mad dash toward the curtains, yowling his fuzzy head off. She stormed around the couch, whipping the curtains back, wondering what the fuck he'd thrown at her window. The fallen angel hovered right there, glaring at her. She refused to back away, even as her heart thundered, refused to do anything but shove open the window, the wind off his mighty wings stirring her hair. What? His dark eyes didn't so much as blink. Striking. That was the only word Bryce could think of to describe his handsome face, full of powerful lines and sharp cheekbones.
You can make this investigation easy, or you can make it hard.
I don't-
Spare me.
Hunt's dark hair shifted in the wind. The rustle and beat of his wings overpowered the traffic below, and the humans in Vainir now gawking up at him.
You don't appreciate being watched or coddled or whatever.
He crossed his muscled arms.
Neither of us gets a say in this arrangement. So rather than waste your breath arguing about boundaries, why don't you make that list of suspects and Danica's movements?
Why don't you stop telling me what I should be doing with my time? She could have sworn she tasted ether as he growled.
I'm going to be straight with you.
Goody.
His nostrils flared. I will do whatever the hell it takes to solve this case, even if it means tying you to a fucking chair until you write those lists.
She smirked. Bondage, nice. Hunt's eyes darkened.
Do not fuck with me.
Yeah, yeah, you're the Umbra Mortis.
His teeth flashed. I don't care what you call me, Quinlan, so long as you do what you're told.
Fucking alpha hole. Immortality is a long time to have a giant stick up your ass.
Bryce put her hands on her hips, never mind that she was completely undermined by Syrinx dancing at her feet, prancing in place.
Dragging his stare away from her, the angel surveyed her pet with raised brows.
Syrinx's tail waved and bobbed.
Hunt snorted, as if despite himself.
You're a smart beastie, aren't you?
He threw a scornful glance to Bryce.
Smarter than your owner, it seems.
Make that the king of alpha holes. But Syrinx preened. And Bryce had the stupid, overwhelming urge to hide Syrinx from Hunt, from anyone, from anything. He was hers and no one else's, and she didn't particularly like the thought of anyone coming into their little bubble.
Hunt's stare lifted to her own again. Do you own any weapons?
The purely male gleam in his eye told her that he assumed she didn't. Bother me again, she said sweetly, just before she shut the window in his face, and you'll find out. Hunt wondered how much trouble he'd get in if he chucked Bryce Quinlan into the Istros. After the morning he'd had, any punishment from Micah or being turned into a pig by Jessica Roga was starting to seem well worth it. Leaning against a lamppost, his face coated with the misting rain that drifted through the city, Hunt clenched his jaw hard enough to hurt. At this hour, commuters packed the narrow streets of the old square, some heading to jobs in the countless shops and galleries, others aiming for the spires of the CBD, half a mile westward. All of them, however, noted his wings, his face, and gave him a wide berth. Hunt ignored them and glanced at the clock on his phone. 8:15. He'd waited long enough to make the call. He dialed the number and held the phone to his ear, listening to it ring once, twice.
"Please tell me Bryce is alive," said Isaiah,
his voice breathless in a way that told Hunt he was either at the barracks gym or enjoying his boyfriend's company.
"For the moment."
A machine beeped, like Isaiah was dialing down the speed of a treadmill.
"Do I want to know why I'm getting a call this soon?"
A pause.
"Why are you on Sampson Street?"
Though Isaiah probably tracked his location through the beacon on Hunt's phone, Hunt still scowled toward the nearest visible camera. There were likely ones hidden in the cypresses and palm trees flanking the sidewalks, too, or disguised as sprinkler heads popping from the soggy grass of the flower beds, or built into the iron lampposts like the one he leaned against. Someone was always watching. In this entire fucking city, territory, and world, someone was always watching, the cameras so bespelled and warded that they were bomb-proof. Even if this city turned to rubble under the lethal magic of the Asterian Guard's brimstone missiles, the cameras would keep recording.
"Are you aware?"
Hunt said, his voice a low rasp as a bevy of quails snaked across the street, some tiny shifter family, no doubt.
"That chimeras are able to pick locks, open doors, and jump between two places as if they were walking from one room to another?"
"No?"
Isaiah said, panting. Apparently Quinlan wasn't either, if she bothered to have a crate for her beast. Though maybe the damn thing was more to give the chimera a designated comfort space, like people did with their dogs, since there was no way he would stay contained without a whole host of enchantments. The lowers, the class of Vanir to which the chimera belonged, had all sorts of interesting small powers like that. It was part of why they demanded such high prices on the market, and why, even millennia later, the Senate and Asteri had shot down any attempts to change the laws that branded them as property to be traded. The lowers were too dangerous, they'd claimed, unable to understand the laws, with powers that could be disruptive if left unchecked by the various spells and magic-infused tattoos that held them. And too lucrative, especially for the ruling powers whose families profited from their trade. So they remained lowers. Hunt tucked his wings in one at a time. Water beaded off the gray feathers like clear jewels.
"This is already a nightmare,"
Isaiah coughed.
"You watched Quinlan for one night?"
10 hours, to be exact. Right until her pet chimera just appeared next to me at dawn, bit me in the ass for looking like I was dozing off, and then vanished again, right back into the apartment. Just as Quinlan came out of her bedroom and opened the curtains to see me grabbing my own ass like a fucking idiot. Do you know how sharp a chimera's teeth are?"
"No."
Hunt could have sworn he heard a smile in Isaiah's voice.
"When I flew over to explain, she blasted her music and ignored me like a fucking brat."
With enough enchantments around her apartment to keep out a host of angels, Hunt hadn't even tried to get in through a window since he'd tested them all overnight. So he'd been forced to glower through the glass, returning to the roof only after she'd emerged from her bedroom in nothing but a black sports bra and thong. Her smirk at his backtracking wings had been nothing short of feline.
"I didn't see her again until she went for a run. She flipped me off as she left."
"So, you went to Sampson Street to brood? What's the emergency?"
"The emergency, asshole, is that I might kill her before we find the real murderer."
He had too much writing on this case.
"You're just pissed she's not cowering or fawning."
"Like I fucking want anyone to fawn."
"Where's Quinlan now?"
"Getting her nails done."
Isaiah's pause sounded a hell of a lot like he was about to burst out laughing.
"Hence your presence on Sampson Street before 9.
"Gazing through the window of a nail salon like a goddamned stalker."
The fact that Quinlan wasn't gunning for the murderer grated as much as her behavior, and Hunt couldn't help being suspicious. He didn't know how or why she might have killed Danica, her pack, and Tertian, but she'd been connected to all of them, had gone to the same place on the nights they'd been murdered.
She knew something. Or had done something. I'm hanging up now. The bastard was smiling. Hunt knew it.
You faced down enemy armies, survived Sandriel's arena, gone toe-to-toe with archangels.
Isaiah chuckled. Surely a party girl isn't as difficult as all that. The line cut off. Hunt ground his teeth. Through the glass window of the salon, he could perfectly make out Bryce seated at one of the marble workstations, hands outstretched to a pretty reddish-gold scaled Draki female who was putting yet another coat of polish on her nails. How many did she need? At this hour, only a few other patrons were seated inside, nails or talons or claws in the process of being filed and painted and whatever the hell they did to them in there. But all of them kept glancing through the window. To him. He'd already earned a glare from the teal-haired falcon shifter at the welcome counter, but she hadn't dared come out to ask him to stop making her clients nervous and leave. Bryce sat there, wholly ignoring him, chatting and laughing with the female doing her nails. It had taken Hunt a matter of moments to launch into the skies when Bryce had left her apartment. He'd trailed overhead, well aware of the morning commuters who would film him if he landed beside her in the middle of the street and wrapped his hands around her throat. Her run took her 15 blocks away, apparently. She had barely broken a sweat by the time she jogged up to the nail salon, her skin-tight athletic clothes damp with the misting rain, and threw him a look that warned him to stay outside. That had been an hour ago. A full hour of drills and files and scissors being applied to her nails in a way that would make the hind herself cringe. Pure torture. 5 minutes. Quinlan had 5 more fucking minutes, then he'd drag her out. Micah must have lost his mind. That was the only explanation for asking her to help, especially if she prioritized her nails over solving her friend's murder. He didn't know why it came as a surprise. After all he'd seen, everyone he'd met and endured, this sort of shit should have ceased to bother him long ago. Someone with Quinlan's looks would become accustomed to the doors that face and body of hers opened without so much as a squeak of protest. Being half-human had some disadvantages, yes. A lot of them, if he was being honest about the state of the world. But she'd done well. Really fucking well, if that apartment was any indication. The Draki female set aside the bottle and flicked her claw-tipped fingers over Bryce's nails. Magic sparked, Bryce's ponytail shifting as if a dry wind had blown by. Like that of the Valbaran Fae, Draki magic skewed toward flame and wind. In the northern climes of Pangaea, though, he'd met Draki and Fae whose power could summon water, rain, mist, element-based magic. But even among the reclusive Draki and the Fae, no one bore lightning. He knew because he'd looked, desperate in his youth for anyone who might teach him how to control it. He'd had to teach himself in the end. Bryce examined her nails and smiled, and then hugged the female, fucking hugged her, like she was some sort of God's damned war hero for the job she'd done. Hunt was surprised his teeth weren't ground to stumps by the time she headed for the door, waving goodbye to the smiling falcon shifter at the front desk, who handed her a clear umbrella, presumably to borrow against the rain. The glass door opened, and Bryce's eyes at last met Hunt's.
Are you fucking kidding me?
The words exploded out of him. She popped open the umbrella, nearly taking out his eye.
Did you have something better to do with your time?
You made me wait in the rain.
You're a big tough male. I think you can handle a little water.
Hunt fell into step beside her.
I told you to make those two lists, not go to a motherfucking beauty salon.
She paused at an intersection, waiting for the bumper-to-bumper cars to crawl past, and straightened to her full height. Not anywhere close to his, but she somehow managed to look down her nose at him while still looking up at him.
If you're so good at investigating, why don't you look into it and spare me the effort?
You were given an order by the governor.
The words sounded ridiculous even to him. She crossed the street, and he followed.
And I'd think you'd be personally motivated to figure out who's behind this.
Don't assume anything about my motivations.
She dodged around a puddle of either rain or piss. In the old square, it was impossible to tell. He refrained from pushing her into that puddle.
Do you have a problem with me?
I don't really care about you enough to have a problem with you.
Likewise.
Her eyes really did glow then, as if a distant fire simmered within. She surveyed him, sizing up every inch and somehow, some fucking how, making him feel about 3 inches tall. He said nothing until they turned down her street at last. He growled,
"You need to make the list of suspects and the list of Danica's last week of activities."
She examined her nails, now painted in some sort of color gradient that went from pink to periwinkle tips, like the sky at twilight.
No one likes a nag, Athalar.
They reached the arched glass entry of her apartment building, structured like a fish's fin, he'd realized last night, and the door slid open. Ponytail swishing, she said cheerfully,
"Bye."
Hunt drawled,
"People might see you dicking around like this, Quinlan, and think you were trying to hinder an official investigation."
If he couldn't bully her into working on this case, maybe he could scare her into it. Especially with the truth. She wasn't off the hook. Not even close. Her eyes flared again, and damn if it wasn't satisfying. So Hunt just added, mouth curving into a half smile,
"Better hurry. You wouldn't want to be late for work."
Going to the nail salon had been worth it on so many levels, but perhaps the biggest benefit had been pissing off Athalar.
"I don't see why you can't let the angel in,"
moped Lahaba, perched atop an old pillar candle.
"He's so handsome."
In the bowels of the gallery library, client paperwork spread on the table before her, Bryce cast a sidelong glare at the female-shaped flame.
"Do not drip wax on these documents, Lily."
The fire sprite grumbled and plopped her ass on the candle's wick anyway. Wax dribbled down the sides, her tangle of yellow hair floating above her head, as if she were indeed a flame given a plump female shape.
"He's just sitting on the roof in the dreary weather. Let him rest on the couch down here. Syrinx says the angel can brush his coat, if he needs something to do."
Bryce sighed at the painted ceiling, the night sky rendered in loving care. The giant gold chandelier that hung down the center of the space was fashioned after an exploding sun, with all the other dangling lights in perfect alignment of the seven planets.
"The angel,"
she said, frowning towards Syrinx's slumbering form on the green velvet couch,
"is not allowed in here."
Lahaba let out a sad little noise.
"One day, the boss will trade my services to some lecherous old creep, and you'll regret ever denying me anything."
"One day, that lecherous old creep will actually make you do your job and guard his books, and you'll regret spending all these hours of relative freedom moping." Wax sizzled on the table. Bryce whipped her head up. Lahaba was sprawled belly down on the candle, an idle hand hanging off the side. Dangerously near the documents Bryce had spent the past 3 hours poring over.
"Do not."
Lahaba rotated her arm so that the tattoo inked amid the simmering flesh was visible. It had been stamped on her arm within moments of her birth, Lahaba had said. SPQM. It was inked on the flesh of every sprite, fire or water or earth. It didn't matter. Punishment for joining the Angel's Rebellion 200 years ago, when the sprites had dared protest their status as Peregrini, as lowers. The Asteri had gone even further than their enslavement and torture of the angels. They'd decreed after the rebellion that every sprite, not only the ones who joined Shahar and her legion, would be enslaved and cast from the House of Sky and Breath. All of their descendants would be wanderers and slaves, too. Forever. It was one of the more spectacularly fucked episodes of the Republic's history. Lahaba sighed.
"Buy my freedom from Jessiba. Then I can go live at your apartment and keep your baths and all your food warm."
She could do far more than that, Bryce knew. Technically, Lahaba's magic outranked Bryce's own. But most non-humans could claim the same. And even while it was greater than Bryce's, Lahaba's power was still an ember compared to the Fae's flames. Her father's flames. Bryce set down the client's purchase papers.
It's not that easy, Lily.
Syrinx told me you're lonely. I could cheer you up.
In answer, the Chimera rolled onto his back, tongue dangling from his mouth, and snored. One, my building doesn't allow fire sprites or water sprites. It's an insurance nightmare. Two, it's not as simple as asking Jessaba. She might very well get rid of you because I ask.
Lahaba cupped her round chin in her hand and dripped another freckle of wax dangerously close to the paperwork.
She gave you Ciri.
Kathona, give her patience. She let me buy Syrinx because my life was fucked up, and I lost it when she got bored with him and tried to sell him off.
The fire sprite said quietly,
because Danica died.
Bryce closed her eyes for a second, then said,
yeah.
You shouldn't curse so much, Bibi.
Then you really won't like the angel.
He led my people into battle, and he's a member of my house. I deserve to meet him.
Last I checked, that battle went rather poorly, and the fire sprites were kicked out of Sky and Breath thanks to it.
Lahaba sat up, legs crossed.
Membership in the houses is not something a government can decree. Our expulsion was in name only.
It was true, but Bryce still said,
what the Asteri and their Senate say goes.
Lahaba had been guardian of the gallery's library for decades. Logic insisted that ordering a fire sprite to watch over a library was a poor idea. But when a third of the books in the place would like nothing more than to escape, kill someone, or eat them, in varying orders, having a living flame keeping them in line was worth any risk. Even the endless chatter, it seemed. Something thumped on the mezzanine, as if a book had dived off the shelf of its own accord. Lahaba hissed toward it, turning a deep blue. Paper and leather whispered as the errant book found its place once again. Bryce smiled, and then the office phone rang. One glance at the screen had her reaching for the phone and hissing at the sprite,
back on your perch now.
Lahaba had just reached the glass dome where she maintained her fiery vigil over the library's wandering books, when Bryce answered,
afternoon, boss. Any progress?
Still investigating. How's Pangera?
Jessaba didn't bother answering, instead saying, I've got a client coming in at 2 o'clock. Be ready, and stop letting Lahaba prattle. She has a job to do.
The line went dead. Bryce rose from the desk where she'd been working all morning. The oak panels of the library beneath the gallery looked old, but they were wired with the latest tech and best enchantments money could buy. Not to mention, there was a killer sound system that she often put to good use when Jessaba was on the other side of the Haldron. Not that she danced down here. Not anymore. Nowadays, the music was mostly to keep the thrumming of the first lights from driving her insane, or for drowning out Lahaba's monologues. Bookshelves lined every wall, interrupted only by a dozen or so small tanks and terrariums, occupied by all manner of small common animals, lizards and snakes and turtles and various rodents. Bryce often wondered if they were all people who'd pissed off Jessaba. None showed any sign of awareness, which was even more horrifying if it was true. They'd not only been turned into animals, but had also forgotten they were something else entirely. Naturally, Lahaba had named all of them, each one more ridiculous than the last. Nutmeg and Ginger were the names of the geckos in the tank closest to Bryce. Sisters, Lahaba claimed. Miss Poppy was the name of the black and white snake on the mezzanine. Lahaba never named anything in the biggest tank, though. The massive one that occupied an entire wall of the library, and whose glass expanse revealed a watery gloom. Mercifully, the tank was currently empty. Last year, Bryce lobbied on Lahaba's behalf for a few iris eels to brighten the murky blue with their shimmering rainbow light. Jessica had said no, and instead bought a pet kelpie that had humped the glass with all the finesse of a wasted college guy. Bryce had made sure that motherfucker was given to a client as a gift really quickly. Bryce braced herself for the work before her, not the paperwork or the client, but what she had to do tonight. Gods fucking help her when Athalar got wind of it. But the thought of his face when he realized what she had planned, yeah, it'd be satisfying. If she survived. Chapter 16. The mirth root Rune had smoked 10 minutes ago with Flynn might have been more potent than his friend had let on. Lying on his bed, specially shaped fey headphones over his arched ears, Rune closed his eyes and let the thumping bass and sizzling, soaring synthesizer of the music send him drifting. His booted foot tapped in time to the steady beat, the drumming fingers he'd interlaced over his stomach echoing each flutter of notes high, high above. Every breath pulled him farther back from consciousness, as if his very mind had been yanked a good few feet away from where it normally rested, like a captain at the helm of a ship. Heavy relaxation melted him, bone and blood morphing to liquid gold. Each note sent it rippling through him, every stressor and sharp word and aggravation leaked from him, slithered off the bed like a snake. He flipped off those feelings as they slid away. He was well aware that he'd taken the hits of Flynn's mirth root thanks to the hours he'd spent brooding over his father's bullshit orders. His father could go to hell. The mirth root wrapped soft, sweet arms around his mind and dragged him into its shimmering pool. Rune let himself drown in it, too mellow to do anything but let the music wash over him, his body sinking into the mattress, until he was falling through shadows and starlight. The strings of the song hovered overhead, golden threads that glittered with sound. Was he still moving his body? His eyelids were too heavy to lift to check. A scent like lilac and nutmeg filled the room. Female. Fae. If one of the females partying downstairs had shown herself into his room, thinking she'd get a nice sweaty ride with a prince of the Fae, she'd be sorely disappointed. He was in no shape for fucking right now. At least, not any fucking that would be worthwhile. His eyelids were so incredibly heavy. He should open them. Where the hell were the controls to his body? Even his shadows had drifted away, too far to summon. The scent grew stronger. He knew that scent. Knew it as well as... Rune jerked upward, eyes flying open to find his sister standing at the foot of his bed. Bryce's mouth was moving, whiskey-colored eyes full of dry amusement, but he couldn't hear a word she said. Not a word. Oh, right, the headphones, blasting music. Blinking furiously, gritting his teeth against the drug trying to haul him back down, 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 Rune removed the headphones and hit pause on his phone. What? Bryce leaned against his chipped wood dresser. At least she was in normal clothes for once. Even if the jeans were painted on and the cream-colored sweater left little to the imagination. I said, you'll blow out your eardrums listening to music that loud. Rune's head spun as he narrowed his eyes at her, blinking at the halo of starlight that danced around her head, at her feet. He blinked again, pushing past the auras clouding his vision, and it was gone. Another blink and it was there. Bryce snorted. You're not hallucinating. I'm standing here. His mouth was 1,000 miles away, but he managed to ask, Who let you in? Declan and Flynn were downstairs, along with half a dozen of their top fey warriors. A few of them people he didn't want within a block of his sister. Bryce ignored his question, frowning toward the corner of his room, toward the pile of unwashed laundry and the star sword he'd chucked atop it. The sword glimmered with starlight, too. He could have sworn the damn thing was singing. Rune shook his head, as if it'd clear out his ears, and Bryce said, I need to talk to you. The last time Bryce had been in this room, she'd been 16, and he'd spent hours beforehand cleaning it, and the whole house. Every bong and bottle of liquor, every pair of female underwear that had never been returned to its owner, every trace and scent of sex and drugs and all the stupid shit they did here had been hidden. And she'd stood right there during that last visit, stood there as they screamed at each other. Then and now blurred, Bryce's form shrinking and expanding, her adult face blending into teenage softness, the light in her amber eyes warming and cooling, his vision surrounding the scene glinting with starlight, starlight, starlight. Fucking hell, Bryce muttered, and aimed for the door. You're pathetic. He managed to say, Where are you going? To get you water. She flung the door open. I can't talk to you like this. It occurred to him then that this had to be important if she was not only here, but eager to get him to focus. And that there might still be a chance he was hallucinating, but he wasn't going to let her venture into the warren of sin unaccompanied. On legs that felt 10 miles long, feet that weighed 1,000 pounds, he staggered after her. The dim hallway hid most of the various stains on the white paint, all thanks to the various parties he and his friends had thrown in 50 years of being roommates. Well, they'd had this house for 20 years, and had only moved because their first one had literally started to fall apart. This house might not last another 2 years, if he was being honest. Bryce was halfway down the curving grand staircase, the first lights of the crystal chandelier bouncing off her red hair in that shimmering halo. How had he not noticed the chandelier was hanging askew? Must be from when Declan had leapt off the stair railing onto it, swinging around and swigging from his bottle of whiskey. He'd fallen off a moment later, too drunk to hold on. If the Autumn King knew the shit they did in this house, there was no way he or any other city head would allow them to lead the Fey Ox Division. No way Micah would ever tap him to take his father's place on that council. But getting wasted was for off nights only, never when on duty or on call. Bryce hit the worn oak floor of the first level, edging around the beer pong table occupying most of the foyer. A few cups littered its stained plywood surface, painted by Flynn with what they'd all deemed was high-class art. An enormous fey male head devouring an angel whole, only frayed wings visible through the snapped-shut teeth. It seemed to ripple with movement as Rune cleared the stairs. He could have sworn the painting winked at him. Yeah, water. He needed water. Bryce showed herself through the living room, where the music blasted so loud it made Rune's teeth rattle in his skull. He entered in time to see Bryce striding past the pool table in the rear of the long, cavernous space. A few ox warriors stood around it, females with them, deep in a game. Tristan Flynn, son of Lord Hawthorne, presided over it from a nearby armchair, a pretty dryad on his lap. The glazed light in his brown eyes mirrored Rune's own. Flynn gave Bryce a crooked grin as she approached. All it usually took was one look, and females crawled into Tristan Flynn's lap just like the tree nymph. Or, if the look was more of a glower, any enemies outright bolted. Charming as all hell and lethal as fuck. It should have been the Flynn family motto. Bryce didn't stop as she passed him, unfazed by his classic fey beauty and considerable muscles, but demanded over her shoulder, What the fuck did you give him? Flynn leaned forward, prying his short chestnut hair free from the dryad's long fingers. How do you know it was me? Bryce walked toward the kitchen at the back of the room, accessible through an archway.
Because you look high off your ass, too.
Declan called from the sectional couch at the other end of the living room, a laptop on his knee and a very interested Draki male half-sprawled over him, running clawed fingers through Deck's dark red hair.
Hey, Bryce, to what do we owe the pleasure?
Bryce jerked her thumb back at Rune.
Checking on the chosen one. How's your fancy tech crap going, Deck?
Declan Emmett didn't usually appreciate anyone belittling the lucrative career he'd built, on a foundation of hacking into Republic websites and then charging them ungodly amounts of money to reveal their critical weaknesses. But he grinned.
Still raking in the marks.
Nice, Bryce said, continuing into the kitchen and out of sight. Some of the Ox warriors were staring toward the kitchen now, blatant interest in their eyes. Flynn growled softly.
She's off limits, assholes.
That was all it took. Not even a snapping vine of Flynn's earth magic, rare among the fire-prone Valbaran Fae. The others immediately returned their attention to the pool game. Rune threw his friend a grateful look and followed Bryce. But she was already back in the doorway, water bottle in hand.
Your fridge is worse than mine, she said,
shoving the bottle toward him and entering the living room again. Rune sipped, as the stereo system in the back thumped the opening notes of a song, guitars wailing, and she angled her head, listening, weighing. Fae impulse to be drawn to music and to love it. Perhaps the one side of her heritage she didn't mind. He remembered her showing him her dance routines as a young teenager. She'd always looked so unbelievably happy. He'd never had the chance to ask why she stopped. Rune sighed, forcing himself to focus, and said to Bryce,
Why are you here?
She stopped near the sectional.
I told you. I need to talk to you.
Rune kept his face blank. He couldn't remember the last time she'd bothered finding him.
Why would your cousin need an excuse to chat with us?
Flynn asked, murmuring something in the dryad's delicate ear that had her heading for the cluster of her three friends at the pool table, her narrow hips swishing in a reminder of what he'd miss if he waited too long. Flynn drawled,
She knows we're the most charming males in town.
Neither of his friends ever guessed the truth, or at least voiced any suspicions. Bryce tossed her hair over a shoulder as Flynn rose from his armchair.
I have better things to do
than hang out with Fae losers,
Flynn finished for her, heading to the built-in bar against the far wall.
Yeah, you've said so 100 times now, but look at that. Here you are, hanging with us in our humble abode.
Despite his carefree demeanor, Flynn would one day inherit his father's title, Lord Hawthorne, which meant that for the past several decades, Flynn had done everything he could to forget that little fact, and the centuries of responsibilities it would entail. He poured himself a drink, then a second one that he handed to Bryce.
Drink up, honey cakes.
Rune rolled his eyes. But it was nearly midnight, and she was at their house, on one of the rougher streets in the old square, with a murderer on the loose. Rune hissed.
You were given an order to lie low.
She waved a hand, not touching the whiskey in her other.
My imperial escort is outside,
scaring everyone away. Don't worry. Both his friends went still. The Draki male took that as an invitation to drift away, aiming for the billiards game behind them, as Declan twisted to look at her. Rune just said,
Who?
A little smile. Bryce asked, swirling the whiskey in its glass.
Is this house really befitting of the Chosen One?
Flynn's mouth twitched. Rune shot him a warning glare, just daring him to bring up the Starborn shit right now. Outside of his father's villa and court, all that had gotten Rune was a lifetime of teasing from his friends. Rune ground out,
Let's hear it, Bryce.
Odds were she'd come here just to piss him off. She didn't respond immediately, though. No. Bryce traced a circle on a cushion, utterly unfazed by the three Fae warriors watching her every breath. Tristan and Declan had been Rune's best friends for as long as he could remember, and always had his back, no questions asked. That they were highly trained and efficient warriors was beside the point, though they'd saved each other's asses more times than Rune could count. Going through their ordeals together had only cemented that bond. The ordeal itself varied depending on the person. For some, it might be as simple as overcoming an illness or a bit of personal strife.
For others, it might be slaying a worm or a demon. The greater the fey, the greater the ordeal.
Rune had been learning to wield his shadows from his hateful cousins in Avalon, his two friends with him, when they'd all gone through their ordeal, nearly dying in the process. It had culminated in Rune entering the mist-shrouded cave of princes and emerging with the Star Sword and saving them all. And when he'd made the drop weeks later, it had been Flynn, fresh from his own drop, who'd anchored him. Declan asked, his deep voice rumbling over the music and chatter,
"What's going on?"
For a second, Bryce's swagger faltered. She glanced at them, their casual clothes, the places where she knew their guns were hidden even in their own home, their black boots and the knives tucked inside them. Bryce's eyes met Rune's.
"I know what that look means," Flynn groaned.
"It means you don't want us to hear."
Bryce didn't take her eyes away from Rune as she said, "Yep." Declan slammed his laptop shut.
"You're really gonna go all mysterious and shit?"
She looked between Declan and Flynn, who had been inseparable since birth.
"You two dickbags have the biggest mouths in town."
Flynn winked.
"I thought you liked my mouth."
"Keep dreaming, lordling," Bryce smirked. Declan chuckled, earning a sharp elbow from Flynn and the glass of whiskey from Bryce. Rune swigged from his water, willing his head to clear further.
"Enough of this crap," he bit out.
All that mirthroot threatened to turn on him as he pulled Bryce toward his bedroom again. When they arrived, he took up a spot by the bed.
"Well?"
Bryce leaned against the door, the wood peppered with holes from all the knives he'd chucked at it for idle target practice.
"I need you to tell me if you've heard anything about what the Viper Queen's been up to."
This could not be good.
"Why?"
"Because I need to talk to her."
"Are you fucking nuts?"
Again, that annoying-ass smile.
"Maximus Tertian was killed on her turf. Did the Ox get any intel about her movements that night?"
"Your boss put you up to this?" It reeked of Roga.
"Maybe. Do you know anything?"
She angled her head again, that silky sheet of hair, the same as their father's, shifting with the movement.
"Yes. Tertian's murder was the same as Danica's and the Pack's."
Any trace of a smile faded from her face.
"Philip Briggs didn't do it. I want to know what the Viper Queen was up to that night, if the Ox has any knowledge of her movements."
Rune shook his head.
"Why are you involved in this?"
"Because I was asked to look into it."
"Don't fuck with this case. Tell your boss to lay off. This is a matter for the governor."
"And the governor commandeered me to look for the murderer. He thinks I'm the link between them."
"Great. Absolutely fantastic." Isaiah Tiberian had failed to mention that little fact.
"You spoke to the governor."
"Just answer my question. Does the Ox know anything about the Viper Queen's whereabouts on the night of Tertian's death?"
Rune blew out a breath.
"No. I've heard that she pulled her people from the streets. Something spooked her. But that's all I know. And even if I knew the Viper Queen's alibis, I wouldn't tell you. Stay the fuck out of this. I'll call the governor to tell him you're done being his personal investigator."
That icy look, their father's look, passed over her face. The sort of look that told him there was a wild, wicked storm raging beneath that cold exterior. And the power and thrill for both father and daughter lay not in sheer force, but in the control over the self, over those impulses. The outside world saw his sister as reckless, unchecked, but he knew she'd been the master of her fate since before he'd met her. Bryce was just one of those people who, once she'd set her sights on what she wanted, didn't let anything get in her way. If she wanted to sleep around, she did it. If she wanted to party for 3 days straight, she did it. If she wanted to catch Danica's murderer.
"I am going to find the person behind this," she said with quiet fury. "If you try to interfere with it, I will make your life a living hell."
The demon that murderer is using is lethal. He'd seen the crime scene photos. The thought that Bryce had been saved by mere minutes, by sheer drunken stupidity, still twisted him up. Rune continued before she could answer. The Autumn King told you to lie low until the summit. This is the fucking opposite, Bryce.
Well, it's now part of my job. Jessica signed off on it. I can't very well refuse, can I?
No. No one could say no to that sorceress. He slid his hands into the back pockets of his jeans. She ever tell you anything about Luna's horn?
Bryce's brows lifted at the shift in subject, but considering Jessica Roga's field of work, she'd be the one to ask. She had me look for it 2 years ago, Bryce said warily, but it was a dead end. Why?
Never mind.
He eyed the small gold amulet around his sister's neck. At least Jessica gave her that much protection.
Expensive protection, too, and powerful.
Arkesian amulets didn't come cheap, not when there were only a few in the world.
He nodded to it. Don't take that off.
Bryce rolled her eyes. Does everyone in this city think I'm dumb?
I mean it. Beyond the shit you do for work, if you're looking for someone strong enough to summon a demon like that, don't take that necklace off.
At least he could remind her to be smart. She just opened the door. If you hear anything about the Viper Queen, call me.
Rune stiffened, his heart thundering. Do not provoke her.
Bye, Rune.
He was desperate enough that he said, I'll go with you to...
Bye.
Then she was down the stairs, waving in that annoying-as-fuck way at Declan and Flynn, before swaggering out the front door. His friends threw inquisitive looks to where Rune stood on the second-floor landing. Declan's whiskey was still raised to his lips. Rune counted to 10, if only to keep from snapping the nearest object in half, and then vaulted over the railing, landing so hard that the scuffed oak plants shuddered. He felt, more than saw, his friends fall into place behind him, hands within easy reach of their hidden weapons, drinks discarded as they read the fury on his face. Rune stormed through the front door and out into the brisk night, just in time to see Bryce strut across the street. To hunt fucking Athalar.
What the actual hell?
Declan breathed, halting beside Rune on the porch. The Umbra Mortis looked pissed, his arms crossed and wings flaring slightly, but Bryce just breezed past him without so much as a glance, causing Athalar to slowly turn, arms slackening at his sides, as if such a thing had never happened in his long, miserable life. And wasn't that enough to put Rune in a killing sort of mood? Rune cleared the porch and front lawn and stepped into the street, holding out a hand to the car that skidded to a screeching halt. His hand hit the hood, fingers curving, metal dented beneath it. The driver, wisely, didn't scream. Rune strode between two parked sedans, Declan and Flynn close behind, just as Hunt turned to see what the fuss was about. Understanding flashed in Hunt's eyes, quickly replaced by half a smile.
Prince?
What the fuck are you doing here? Hunt jerked his chin toward Bryce, already disappearing down the street.
Protection duty.
Like hell you're watching her. Isaiah Tiberian had failed to mention this, too. A shrug.
Not my call.
The halo across his brow seemed to darken as he sized up Declan and Flynn. Athalar's mouth twitched upward, onyx eyes glinting with an unspoken challenge. Flynn's gathering power had the earth beneath the pavement rumbling. Hunt's shit-eating grin only spread. Rune said, tell the governor to put someone else on the case. Hunt's grin sharpened.
Not an option. Not when it plays to my expertise.
Rune bristled at the arrogance. Sure, Athalar was one of the best demon hunters out there. But fuck, he'd even take Tiberian on this case over the Umbra Mortis. A year ago,
The commander of the 33rd hadn't been dumb enough to get between them when Rune had launched himself at Athalar, having had enough of his snide remarks at the fancy-ass spring equinox party Micah threw every March. He'd broken a few of Athalar's ribs, but the asshole had gotten in a punch that had left Rune's nose shattered and gushing blood all over the marble floors of the Comitium's penthouse ballroom. Neither of them had been pissed enough to unleash their power in the middle of a crowded room, but fists had done just fine. Rune calculated how much trouble he'd be in if he punched the governor's personal assassin again. Maybe it'd be enough to get Hypaxia Enador to refuse to consider marrying him. Rune demanded, "Did you figure out what kind of demon did it?"
"Something that eats little princes for breakfast,"
Hunt crooned. Rune bared his teeth.
"Blow me, Athalar."
Lightning danced over the angel's fingers.
"Must be easy to run your mouth when you're bankrolled by your father."
Hunt pointed to the White House.
"He buy that for you, too."
Rune's shadows rose to meet the lightning wreathing Athalar's fists, setting the parked cars behind him shuddering. He'd learned from his cousins in Avalon how to make the shadows solidify, how to wield them as whips and shields and pure torment, physical and mental. But mixing magic and drugs was never a good idea. Fists it would have to be then, and all it would take was one swing right into Athalar's face. Declan growled,
"This isn't the time or place."
No, it wasn't. Even Athalar seemed to remember the gawking people, the upraised phones recording everything, and the red-haired female nearing the end of the block. Hunt smirked.
"Bye, assholes."
He followed Bryce, lightning skittering over the pavement in his wake. Rune growled at the angel's back.
"Do not fucking let her go to the Viper Queen."
Athalar glanced over his shoulder, his gray wings tucking in. His blink told Rune that he hadn't been aware of Bryce's agenda. A shiver of satisfaction ran through Rune, but Athalar continued down the street, people pressing themselves against buildings to give him a wide berth. The warrior's focus remained on Bryce's exposed neck. Flynn shook his head like a wet dog.
"I literally can't tell if I'm hallucinating right now."
"I wish I were," Rune muttered. He'd need to smoke another mountain of mirthroot to mellow the hell out again. But if Hunt Athalar was watching Bryce? He'd heard enough rumors to know what Hunt could do to an opponent. That he, in addition to being a prime bastard, was relentless, single-minded, and utterly brutal when it came to eliminating threats. Hunt had to obey the order to protect her, no matter what. Rune studied them as they walked away. Bryce would speed up, Hunt would match her pace. She'd drop back, he'd do the same. She'd edge him to the right off the curb and into oncoming traffic. He'd narrowly avoid a swerving car and step back onto the sidewalk. Rune was half tempted to trail them, just to watch the battle of wills.
"I need a drink,"
Declan muttered. Flynn agreed, and the two of them headed back toward the house, leaving Rune alone on the street. Could it really be a coincidence that the murders were starting again? At the same time, his father had given the order to find an object that had gone missing a week before Danica's death. It felt odd, like Erd was whispering, nudging them all. Rune planned to find out why, starting with finding that horn. Chapter 17. Bryce had just succeeded in nudging Hunt into oncoming traffic when he asked,
"Do I get an explanation for why I've had to trail you like a dog all night?"
Bryce shoved her hand into the pocket of her jeans and pulled out a piece of paper, then silently handed it to Hunt. His brow furrowed.
"What's this?"
"My list of suspects," she said,
letting him glance at the names before she snatched it away.
"When did you make this?"
she said sweetly.
"Last night, on the couch."
A muscle ticked in his jaw.
"And you were going to tell me when?"
After you'd spent a whole day assuming I was a dumb, vapid female more interested in getting my nails done than solving this case.
You did get your nails done.
She waved her pretty ombre fingernails in his face. He looked half inclined to bite them.
Do you know what else I did last night?
His silence was delightful.
I looked up Maximus Tertian some more.
Because despite what the governor says, there was no fucking way Danica knew him. And you know what? I was right. And you know how I know I'm right?
Cathona fucking save me,
Hunt muttered.
Because I looked up his profile on Spark.
The dating site?
The dating site. Turns out even creepy vamps are looking for love deep down. And it showed that he was in a relationship, which apparently did nothing to stop him from hitting on me, but that's beside the point. So I did some more digging. And found his girlfriend.
Fuck.
Aren't there people at the 33rd who should be doing this shit?
When he refused to answer, she grinned.
Guess where Tertian's girlfriend works?
Hunt's eyes simmered. He said through his teeth,
at the nail salon on Samson.
And guess who did my nails and got to chatting about the terrible loss of her rich-ass boyfriend?
He ran his hands through his hair, looking so disbelieving that she chuckled.
He snarled, stop with the fucking questions and just tell me, Quinlan.
She examined her gorgeous new nails.
Tertian's girlfriend didn't know anything about who might have wanted to murder him. She said the 33rd did vaguely question her, but that was it. So I told her that I'd lost someone, too.
It was an effort to keep her voice steady, as the memory of that bloody apartment flashed.
She asked me who, I told her, and she looked so shocked that I asked if Tertian was friends with Danica. She told me no. She said she would have known if Maximus was because Danica was famous enough that he'd have been bragging about it. The closest to Danica she or Tertian got was through 2 degrees of separation. Through the Viper Queen, whose nails she does on Sundays.
Danica knew the Viper Queen?
Bryce held up the list.
Danica's job in the Ox made her a friend and enemy to a lot of people. The Viper Queen was one of them.
Hunt paled.
You honestly think the Viper Queen killed Danica?
Tertian was found dead just over her borders. Rune said she pulled her people in last night, and no one knows what kind of powers she has. She could have summoned that demon.
That is a big fucking accusation to make.
Which is why we need to feel her out. This is the only clue we have to go on.
Hunt shook his head.
All right. I can buy the possibility, but we need to go through the right channels to contact her. It could be days or weeks before she deigns to meet with us. Longer if she gets a whiff that we're onto her.
With someone like the Viper Queen, even the law was flexible. Bryce scoffed.
Don't be such a stickler for the rules.
The rules are there to keep us alive. We follow them, or we don't go after her at all.
She waved a hand.
Fine.
A muscle ticked in his jaw again.
And what about Rune? You just dragged your cousin into our business.
My cousin, she said tightly, will be unable to resist the urge to inform his father that a member of the Fey race has been commandeered for an Imperial investigation. How he reacts, who he contacts, might be worth noting.
What? You think the Autumn King could have done this?